Long, Long After School, a short story by Ernest Buckler. I ran into West Holman the very day I was collecting for Miss Trethaway's flowers, but it never came into my head to ask him for a contribution. Miss Trethaway had taught grade 3 in our town for exactly 50 years. She had died the night before in her sleep. As chairman of the school board, I had thought it would be fitting if all the grade 3 alumni who were still around made up enough money to get a really handsome piece. She had no relatives. If I'd given it an instant's consideration, I'd have known that Wes himself must have been in grade 3 sometime or other, but I didn't think. Wes was just coming through the cemetery gate as I was going in. Wes looks after the cemetery, and I sometimes take a shortcut through it on my way to work. I should say that Wes is our local character. His tiny house up behind the ballpark is furnished with almost nothing but books, and he can quote anyone from Seneca to Henry James. But that's his job, caretaker about town. When I spoke to him about Miss Trethaway, a curious change came into his face. You couldn't say that he turned pale, but his stillness was quite different from the conventional one on such occasions. I had expected him to come out with some quote or other, but he didn't say a word. He didn't go to her funeral, but he sent her flowers of his own, or brought them, rather. The following day, when I took the shortcut again, I surprised him on his knees, placing them. His little bunch of flowers was the most incongruous thing you could imagine. It was a corsage of simple flowers, such as a young boy sends his girl for her first formal dance. And more incongruous than its presence in the circumstance of death was its connection with Miss Trethaway herself. I'm quite sure that Miss Trethaway never once had a beau send her flowers, and that she'd never been to a dance in her whole life. I suppose it would never have occurred to me to question anybody but Wes about his motive for doing a thing like that. But I asked Wes about it with no thought of rudeness whatsoever. Wes's privacy seemed to be everyone's property. There was probably a little self-conscious democracy in the gesture when we talked to him at all. "She was so beautiful," he answered me, as if no other explanation was needed. That was plainly ridiculous. That Miss Trethaway was a fine person for having spent a lifetime in small unheralded services could not be disputed. But obviously she hadn't ever been beautiful. Her sturdy plainness was never transfigured, not even for an instant, by the echo of something winsomer which had faded. Her eyes had never been very blue, her skin very pink, or her hair very brown. She wasn't very anything. Her heart might have been headlong, I think now that it was, but there was always that curious precision and economy in her face, which lacks altogether the grain of helter-skelter necessary for any kind of charm. She wasn't very anything. Her heart might have been headlong, I think now that it was, but there was always that curious precision and economy in her face which lacks altogether the grain of helter-skelter necessary to any kind of charm. In short, even when she'd been a girl, she'd been the sort of girl whose slightest eagerness, more than if she were ugly or old, a young man automatically shies away from. "But Wes," I said, half-joking, "she wasn't beautiful. What made you say that?" His story went something like this. He told it in a kind of dogged, confessional earnestness. I guess he'd come to figure that whenever we asked him a personal question, he might as well satisfy our curiosity completely, first as last. "Perhaps you remember how the kids used to tease me at school," he said. I didn't. I guess those things stick in your mind according to which end of the teasing you happen to be on. If the boys would be telling some joke with words in it to giggle over, they'd look at me and say, "Shh, Wes is blushing." Or if we were all climbing up the ladder to the big beam in Hogan's stable, they'd say, Look at Wes. He's so scared he's turning pale. Do you remember the night you steered your sled into mine going down Parker Hill? No, I said. Did I do it on purpose? I don't know, Wes said. Maybe you didn't. I thought you did. Maybe I did. I don't remember. I was taking Miss Banks' wash home on my sled, and you were coasting down the hill. The basket upset, and all the things fell out on the snow. Don't you remember? Miss Trethaway came along, and you all ran. She helped me pick up the stuff and shake the snow off it. She went with me right to Miss Banks' door and told her what had happened. I could never have made Miss Banks believe I didn't upset the stuff myself. I'm sorry, I said. I probably had done it on purpose. That's all right, he said. I didn't mind the boys so much. It was the girls. You can't hit a girl. There just wasn't anything I could do about girls. One day Miss Trethaway was showing us a new game in the schoolyard. I don't remember exactly how it went, but that one where we all made a big circle and someone stood in the center. I put my hand out to close up the ring with the biggest Banks girls, but she wouldn't take it. She said, "Your hands are dirty." Miss Trethaway made us both hold out our hands. She said, "Why, Marilyn, Wes's hands are much cleaner than yours. Maybe Wes doesn't like to get his hands dirty. Did you ever think about that?" She took Marilyn's place herself. Her hand felt safe and warm, I remember, and I guess that's the first day I thought she was beautiful. "I see," I said. I did, and yet I didn't. The Wes I remembered would hate anything with the suggestion of a teacher's pet about it. The only Wes I could seem to remember was the Wes of adolescence, the tough guy with the chip on his shoulder. He was coming to that, but he stuck in an odd parenthesis first. "Did you ever notice, Miss Trethaway," he said, when the other teachers would be talking in the hall about the dances they'd been to over the weekend, or when she'd be telling some kid a story after school, and the kid would run off right in the middle of a sentence when she saw her mother coming to pick her up?" "No," I said. "Why, what about it?" "Oh, nothing, I guess." He drew a deep breath. "Anyway, I decided I'd be stronger and I'd study harder than anyone. And I was, wasn't I? I did. Do you remember the year they voted me the best all-around student in high school?" "I didn't. It must have been after I graduated." "I guess I just can't remember how happy I was about that. I guess I was so happy I could believe anything. That must have been why I let the boys coax me into going to the closing dance." He smiled. "I thought since they'd voted for me. But you can't legislate against a girl's glance." Those were his exact words. Maybe he'd read them somewhere. Maybe they were his own, I don't know. But it was the kind of remark which had built up his quaint reputation as the town philosopher. "I didn't want to go out on the dance floor," he said. "I'd never danced a foxtrot or anything. The girls all had on their evening dresses, and somehow they looked different altogether. They looked as if they wouldn't recognize themselves in their day clothes. Anyway, the boys grabbed hold of me and made me get into a Paul Jones. I was next to Toby Wenfert in the big ring. Jane Evans was right opposite me when the music stopped, but she danced with Toby instead. And the girl next to Jane just glanced at me and then went and sat down. I guess it was a pretty foolish thing to do, but I went down in the basement and drove my fist through a window." "Is that the scar?" I said. I couldn't think of anything else to say. "Oh, it was a lot worse than that," he said. He pulled up his sleeve and traced the faint sickle of the scar way up his arm. "You can hardly see it now, but I almost bled to death right there. I guess I might have if it hadn't been for Miss Trethaway." "Oh," I said, "how's that?" "You see, they didn't have any plasma around in bottles then," he said. "And in those days, no one felt too comfortable about having his blood siphoned off. I guess no one felt like taking any chances for me, anyway. Mother said I could have hers, but hers wasn't right. Mine's that odd type. 3, isn't it? Miss Trethaway's was 3, too. And that's funny, because only 7% of people have it. She gave me a whole quart just as soon as she found out that hers would match. I see, I said. So that was it. And yet I had a feeling that that wasn't it, not quite. She used to come to see me every day, he said. She used to bring me books. Did you know that books, well, that for anyone like me, that's the only way you can... He hesitated, and I knew that that wasn't quite it either. Not until he spoke again, when he spoke so differently, was I sure that only now he was coming to the real thing. "Do you know what Miss Trethaway said when I thanked her for the transfusion?" he said. "She made a joke of it. She said, 'I didn't know whether an old maid's blood would be any good to a fine young specimen like you, Wes, or not.' The thing I always remember. I knew that was the first time she'd ever called herself an old maid to anyone and really felt like laughing. And I remember what I said. I said, 'Miss Trethaway, you're making me blush.' And do you know, that was the very first time I'd ever been able to say that and laugh myself." There was quite a long silence. "She was beautiful," he said softly. "She was a real lady." The cemetery is right next to the river. I looked down the river where the cold December water lapped at the jagged ice thrown up on the banks, and I thought about the boy the color of whose skin was such that he could never blush, and I thought about a girl who had never been asked to a dance. I thought about the corsage. My curiosity was quite satisfied. But somehow I myself had never felt less beautiful or less of a gentleman.